go behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, and welcome to Car Stuff. I'm Scott.
I'm Ben. We are hanging with our super producer, Paul Deckett, today, and we are off to the races, semi-literally.
Yeah.
Tangentially.
Oh. Well, yeah, and hopefully we don't commit any infractions along the way, right?
Right. Yeah, it's true. We've all been in this situation, folks, where you are perhaps in an argument, in what corporate America might call a healthy conversation or a relationship conversation or whatever, and we've all wanted to be able to go back and point to inarguable proof about one thing or another.
Mm-hmm.
And this is part of human nature, and it's very, very, very apparent in competitive sports, even more so in competitive sports like racing, like
yeah.
NASCAR. We're talking about a sport wherein milliseconds matter and can decide the difference between first and second place.
It's even tighter than a game of inches, really.
I mean, yeah.
You've heard the term, right? Game
mm-hmm.
of inches. It's even tighter than that. It's even tighter than, a tenth of a second. It's down to hundreds or thousands of seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you monitor all of that, especially when you're talking about a sport as complex as NASCAR? And I know you might think it's not that complex, but if you've ever watched Pit Road, when everybody's pitting, mm-hmm. the chaos that's happening there, trying to figure out what's going on, who's in the right, who's in the wrong when something happens, the officials that are in charge of officiating really the event, the officiating what's happening during that pit stop, they've got a lot to consider. There's far more happening than they're able to take in.
And they used to have a small army of guys, a cadre
yeah.
of NASCAR officials whose job was to, I'm laughing because it sounds like such a tall order. Their job was to monitor everything that was happening. Pit Road, which Scott just mentioned, is that strip of pavement where cars pull off for pit stops. Pretty self-explanatory.
Oh, sure. I think everybody knows what pit road is. We're talking about over the wall, really,
right.
If you want to get technical about it. It's mm-hmm. where the cars are, where the people that are changing the tires, they're adding the fuel, that kind of thing are happening.
And we did a pretty cool episode on the crews, the pit crews. And how quickly they work.
Oh, yeah, for a lot of different series, right? You know, down to, well, I guess it was NASCAR, IndyCar, Formula mm-hmm. One, all those, how long it takes. And, I think NASCAR right now is right around 12 seconds, somewhere around there is their pit stop length. They do a lot during that 12 seconds and a lot can happen during that 12
they
seconds.
They do more in those 12 seconds than I do. Like with my weekend. You know what I mean?
But you're going to say all day, but I guess you're right. All weekend. You're right.
All weekend. No, when I'm here, I have to do stuff. I'm at my house.
That's a funny thought.
Yeah, I'm like high-fiving myself because I put some laundry in.
I think there used to be an Army commercial, wasn't it? It's like we do more before 6 a.m. than most people do all day.
Yeah, I think
–
I can't remember if it was Army, but it feels
close.
Like it was Armed Forces something.
Yeah, I don't remember which branch, but I think it was Army. But yeah, you can imagine that, with that amount of activity happening and, a pit official or two for each pit box – to try to watch what's going on. And not only that, there's a vehicle that's speeding at them, at their back, at 60 miles an hour, hopefully missing them as it pulls in the pit box.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah. I mean, it was a tough situation for, the NASCAR officials. So there is a workaround now. And I don't know if a lot of people here in our audience are NASCAR fans. I think there's a fair amount. I don't think that
sure.
everybody is by any means, but it's still an interesting thing that's going on here. Even if you're not a fan of NASCAR, still pay attention because this may be coming to a sport that you love as well.
Yes.
And it probably already has come to a sport that you love. We're talking about a company, or we will be talking about a company by the name of Hawkeye Innovations. Now, if you go to HawkeyeInnovations.com, you'll find out that they have technology that's in place for soccer, cricket, tennis, NASCAR, as we said, rugby.
Badminton.
Yeah, volleyball, basketball, ice hockey, field hockey, horse racing, snooker. snooker.
Very, very bloody and competitive sport.
Yeah, in fact, all track and field athletics. We're talking about multi-sport events like the Olympics. I think there were 20 Olympics that – 20 sports in the Olympics in London. I think it was in, 2012, mm-hmm. Where they officiated as well – or not officiated, but provide these augmented reality services for. Now, if you've watched sports recently – you know that augmented reality or enhanced production for broadcast is something really important to the fans.
Right, right. Like if you are in the U.S. and you catch a U.S. football game, you know, one of the coolest things is the line that they project across
sure.
the field, right?
Yeah, that's a simple version of it, right? Mm-hmm. There's even more complex versions of it for tennis or yeah. Or golf or, you know, whatever, where they can show the trajectory of the ball, you know, like where the ball lands on the line, so that they can ensure that every call that's made by the person there, the officiating, you know, official, I guess, as being a good call or a bad call, and that's how they review these as well, by looking at these, these enhanced vision of what's really happening on the field that they provide to the umpires or the line judges in order mm-hmm. for them to review. But at home, if you're at home watching this on television, it looks really slick. It looks like, you know, they're able to give you the ball spin rate on a tennis ball. They're able to give you the serve speed, of course, which they've been doing that for a long time. And it's better than just like a super slow-mo thing because, again, it shows you the ball trajectory and it can even show you the path that it's taken for the last, I don't know, three or four volleys across the net. It's really fascinating. That's one example. I mean, take that to rugby or NASCAR, as we're going to talk about today, or I don't know how many cricket fans we have in the audience, but you know, cricket's actually a big sport overseas, not here in the States.
Right.
But it's pretty big over there.
And actually, Hawkeye originated, in cricket.
Oh, is that right? I didn't know that was their first venture into this sort of thing.
Yeah, quick I can interject a little background about them if you like.
Of course.
All right. So they were developed by a guy named Paul Hawkins, and that's pretty cool to have your last name be Hawkins and to name the thing Hawkeye.
Oh, yeah. Fits. Totally fits.
Part of me hopes that he insists his employees call him Hawkeye.
Oh, like on MASH, right? Hawkeye, yeah.
He's at that level.
Sure.
Oh, man. Paul Hawkins, if you're hearing this, please write in. Oh, excuse me. Hawkeye, if you're hearing this, please write in. So originally, the system came around in 2001 for cricket on TV, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it works with 6 to 7 high-performance cameras. They track a ball from different angles, and then they create a 3D representation of where it's most likely to be. And we'll get into the details and the equipment specifically that
NASCAR uses.
That NASCAR uses. Yeah,
yeah. It's a lot more cameras. A
lot more cameras.
Yeah.
But that's their basic cricket setup. They actually spun off the company to Hawkeye Innovations to focus just on this sports technology and
makes perfect sense. I mean, it's mm-hmm. fantastic when you see it at home. I mean, it has incredible broadcast viewability, I guess. I don't know what better way to say that. I mean, it's an enhanced experience for the viewer that really adds to the excitement of it.
Oh, you know, I hear a lot of newscasters saying this, the optics.
Have you heard
that?
I have, yeah.
It's kind of a ridiculous, fluffy phrase, but in this situation.
Well, consider this. I mean, think about a sport like ice hockey where the puck is moving so fast and it's so hard to see from a wide angle.
Mm-hmm.
A system like this really helps you because they're able to, show you more at home than you are able to see if you were, just watching on some grainy old television or something.
Right.
With modern, HD TVs and, large screens, it's a lot easier to begin with, but this really, really enhances it. I mean, and they're sure that it's a goal. Every time there's a goal, they're sure that it's a goal.
Right. No ifs, ands, or buts.
Same thing with a soccer ball. Same thing with a hockey puck, mm-hmm. With a cricket, what do you call it? A ball?
A ball.
Is it a ball? A cricket ball?
Yeah, it's
ball?
A ball.
That's it? They just call it a cricket ball?
I mean, they might have some weird name for it, like the wonker or something.
Well, yeah,
I don't know.
I was hoping that there was something like that. I don't know. I thought maybe I could just come up with it just like that. But,
I should have just lied to you.
Yeah. But anyway, so, whatever the sport is, if it has a ball, a puck, or, whatever.
Right.
They're able to determine that, yes, indeed, it did cross the plane of the goal, and it is a goal.
So this is pretty important. I'm longtime NASCAR fans, you know that NASCAR, like a lot of other racing organizations, it's a study in disruptive technology on some level, mm-hmm. because there is constant innovation, and just like with Formula One, the race teams are always trying to see how far they can push a rule, right?
Bend the rules, right?
Bend the rules.
How many times on this podcast have we talked about rule benders, particularly in NASCAR?
Right.
I mean, that seems to be where a lot of that is born, really. I mean, it seems like those are always the guys that are just pushing and bending as much as possible. Just really, really reading over the rules and finding that little tiny loophole and then taking advantage of that. And then by the next race, it's changed. You know, the rules have changed.
Yeah.
In fact, that's one of the problems with what's happening in the NASCAR pit area is that the rules are changing so fast. There's so many rules that a lot of the teams can't keep up with them. So the NASCAR officiating team is enforcing or imposing penalties on the teams when they don't even know they did anything wrong. They'll have to show them. And this is a great learning tool for the teams as well. They learn a lot of things that they didn't know before.
Perfect point. So this also means this constant churn of rules and constant revision also means that NASCAR itself, the organization itself, has to innovate their technology. Now, for a while, for a long time, their old system was, as one author describes it, 40 guys in fire suits who had to watch both the vehicle and the pit crew while the vehicle was driving toward them at 60 mph. And the problem with that, obviously, is human error. You know, we've got one person trying to watch multiple people, and each of those multiple people that are under supervision could do any single number of infractions.
Oh, you know? Sure, yeah.
Any single infraction or a number of infractions, maybe accidentally. So automating this or using a technological edge could greatly improve the accuracy of NASCAR, so long as it worked. So they did a test.
Yeah. Now I think it's 6 crew members over the wall. So, you know, the official that was standing out at the corner of the pit box is, you know, not only worried about the car that's speeding up behind them, the race car. And of course, you know, the driver of the race car is more concerned about hitting his marks in the box than the official that's standing there. Sometimes
right.
they overlook that. It's easy to do. You know, you get that tunnel vision, I guess.
And it's happening so fast.
And 6 crew members, he's trying to watch what 6 crew members are doing because there's specifics about when they're able to even touch the ground, as a car pulls in. There's so much to watch, you know, and as they leave, you know, during the pit stop and everything. So, they did a test, right? They did this test, and I don't remember what year this test happened. Was it in 2015, or is 2015 when they implemented the system? I can't remember.
It was around or slightly before 2015.
All right, so right in that area, and the test was, you know, just simply allow the system to happen. You know, let the system operate while they still had the officials on the ground, while they're still in the pit boxes,
right.
And then they pitted them against each other, and they found out that the officials on the ground called 3 penalties during that race.
Mm-hmm.
The Hawkeye system caught 177 infractions in the pit during that same time.
And again, those 177 were all legit.
Yeah, those are penalties that, you know, the officials that were on the ground just simply missed. They simply overlooked because they were either distracted, looking the wrong way. The crew knows that they're on the other side of the car, can't see what I'm doing over here.
Right.
That type of thing was going on.
Well, it's one human being monitoring 6 people for the span of 12 seconds with a limited vantage point. So the number, it's not surprising that Hawkeye would have a higher rate, but it is astonishing the degree of difference between the two systems. So you're probably wondering, were all 177 of these legit? The answer is yes. You may also be wondering, how the heck does this thing work? We'll tell you after a word from our sponsor.
And we're back, and Ben, you had hinted that we were going to talk about how this thing works, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I explicitly said it.
We'll get to it. yeah, we'll get to it. That's a big part of this episode, right?
Uh-huh.
So, all right. So the thing is, this system is 46 cameras, and they overlap. They view typically 2 pit boxes each, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the 2 pit boxes, you know, these are mounted, if you're thinking about where in a, let's say that you're in an oval track. and the pit road is in front of you, and you're in the grandstands. They're above and behind you. They're on the top of the grandstands, if you want to look at it that way. They're eight high definition television cameras. I think the make of them is Sony. I'm not exactly sure. I don't really need to read to you the stats of the cameras or anything, but each one again covers two pit boxes, and they overlap. The cameras double check each other and then triangulate the vehicles and pit crews' locations. Now, Hawkeye can cut the image into different layers and check them against 3D models, of the entire road they're a little bit behind real time, just by about like 0.1 or 0.2 of a second. But the systems pre-identify the infractions and then, notice, like, let's say if a driver's driving through what they call the forbidden box, which is, I think, the fourth box out from their pit box. We'll talk about that in a second. I've got an example of that. And then the official reviews it in slow motion if necessary. So they're in this giant trailer that you would not suspect is what it is, really. It's parked on the paddock area, or in the paddock area, back where the race trailers are. It's just simply a large black trailer. It's unmarked, no decals, no ID, anything like that. Mm. And it's loaded with NASCAR officials. And they've each got two monitors to watch. The monitors are, like a laptop right in front of them, so they can, input whatever they have to, any kind of data. The other one is a large television screen right in front of them that's mounted on the wall.
With the live feed.
Yeah, that's the live feed. You're right. And it will automatically start feeding the pit stops to each person. They're not reviewing the same one. They're all reviewing different pit stops.
Right.
But these are all, again, NASCAR officials that are charged with officiating the race. So there's still a human there. They still have to verify all this.
They still make the call.
They do make the call, but the computer will tell them, hey, there's an infraction here. It'll show a red box on the screen or a green box. And if it shows a red box, the official then reviews that, that pit stop, whatever happened from, 5 seconds before to 5 seconds after, or whatever the time frame is, but it's long before and long after. And they watch every single thing. And, whatever the computer is calling out is what exactly they'll look for during this pit stop. And oftentimes, I mean, almost every time, the computer is exactly right.
I can see a lot of pit crews hating this because you might become accustomed to being able to slide a couple things under the radar.
Yeah.
So
I think there's two frames of thought or two schools of thought on that, Ben, is that, yeah, some of them hate it because they want to be able to, just cheat a little bit, I guess, or bend the rules maybe a little bit. I wouldn't want to say cheat,
It's a crime.
I hate to say cheat.
It's like, Your Honor, I stole a little bit.
Well, they get used to doing certain things, I guess, and that does kind of cramp their style. But the teams, from what I've heard, have said that it promotes kind of an overall fairness to the whole thing as well. Everybody's on an equal playing field. And the penalties that they receive, I mean, if you're curious about that, it's not like at the end of the race they calculate them up and then take away spots from you.
Oh, no, yeah. They happen in real time.
So, yeah, we're talking about, if you have to have a restart and you have a penalty, there's an infraction that happens in your pit box, you might have to restart at the tail end of the field. Or you might have, a multiple lap penalty if it's severe enough. There might be a stop and go penalty that you have to serve almost immediately.
But one of the really cool things is that under the old system, someone would have to just like explain it to the racing team, which I'm sure, as in any other sport, can promote arguments between people, between officials and team members. But back in this trailer, the officials send video clips of each infraction to the race team.
Yeah, they've got a pit box there.
Yeah.
With monitors. I'm sure everybody has seen the pit boxes. Mm. They're pretty fancy. They got seats on them. They got umbrellas. They've got monitors for the crew to watch, when they're not, doing their thing. And the team owner. So they do send a video clip, right? And they say, here's why.
Uh-huh.
Here's your penalty. Serve it now or else, you get disqualified or you get, if you don't serve this stop and go, you're going to get, a two lap penalty or whatever it would be.
And at the start of each week, the teams also get a compilation video, a supercut of all their pit stops from the earlier week.
That's pretty cool. I'd like to watch that.
Yeah, I'd love to watch it. I hope there's never been a situation where it's always the one guy. I hope there's nobody who accidentally starred in that supercut.
I hope that it's like good and bad. It's like here's just every single pit stop that you had. Here are the three that you had trouble with. Here's the two that were okay.
And it's not, it doesn't stop there. every single detail that the officials log over the course of 500 plus pit stops is stored in a 40 terabyte database, which means that you can track information as never before.
Yeah, of course. I mean, you're able to monitor fuel levels, you know, the types of body repairs that they've used. They can watch every single thing. They know exactly how many tires they went through. So there's no, you know, having to trust the teams to report the right numbers, you know, that they've, you know, whatever they've, kind of burned through over the race weekend,
right.
I guess. It's just a way to keep all the teams completely honest. And I think that, you know, again, as you said, some teams probably rebel against this and try to cheat the system a little bit. Other teams are totally fine with it. You know, they're on board, you know, that, you know, think that it promotes a more level playing field.
Right. And it's not even cheating necessarily. It's just sometimes when people are accustomed to things functioning one way, you want the stuff you're acclimatized to.
And what's nice is that they can show the teams exactly where the error happens. Like if, you know, let's say that a toe of one team member touches the ground before the car is in the box. That's not allowed.
Right.
And if they do that and they could say, like, here it is right here. It's this guy, you know, whatever his name is, John Smith, touched the ground, you know, 0.1 of a second before the car entered the box.
Right.
You know, they're able to point out and say that's, you know, as small as that is a penalty. That's an infraction. You have to serve for that. Just watch it next time. And the team will likely be more careful about that next time. And it makes everybody play a little more fair and a little better, maybe. Makes everything work a little better.
And also think about the long game. If they're collecting all this information, it seems like now, no matter what discipline we're talking about, no matter what field or sphere of public life, every piece of technology is focused on aggregating information, right?
Yeah.
So there's a tremendous advantage over time for someone to say, what are the best practices of pit stops from, you know, 2015 to 2025? And you can build a better pit process from this.
You know what I also think is good about this is
that
it takes away some of the hostility towards the officials. You know, like, because there have been in the past, there have been some, you know, some fights. I mean, verbal abuse or physical abuse of the officials that are in the box for whatever penalty they called. This is a very dispassionate system. I mean, it's something that, you know, it's like the unblinking eye, I guess. You know,
the eye of Sauron.
It sees everything. It really does. and you know, here's video proof of what you did, and here's your penalty. I mean, it takes that human error element out of it. It also takes the human emotion element out of it. I think they realize, like, okay, yeah, you're right. We had a problem with that last one. That's a stop and go penalty.
Well,
let's move on. It's not, you know, you're not going to go out and argue with a guy, you know, and bump chests for, you know, half a lap while the car comes back.
You know, man, I think that is so cool of you to say that. I obviously want to agree, but I cannot completely agree because fixing technology or fixing a process is not the same as fixing people. You know, I think there will still be arguments. I hope that it mitigates that. I hope there are fewer arguments.
Yeah.
But I can still see somebody going, oh, that's bull snot.
Well, you know, there's still plenty of tension between teams and
yeah,
crew members.
True.
So,
yeah.
You know, there's a lot of tension on a NASCAR track. And we've seen so many battles, you know, that happen on the track and off the track, just simply between drivers and team, you know, crew members, pit crew members. You know, this maybe just takes the officials out of it a little bit more than, you know, the stuff that they were subjected to during the race. They can still be angry at them, but, you know, again, here's that dispassionate camera that is looking at the situation and saying, yeah, you committed this infraction, serve your penalty. It happens.
Right. And, you know, the question would be then, what are the benefits of that system? We've outlined a few, but there's still a few more, and we'll get to them right after a word from our sponsor. We're back. I may have slightly accidentally misdirected us just a little bit because there's another important point.
What do we miss?
Well, remember when we were saying earlier that a process can change, but that's not the same as people changing?
Yeah.
Pit crews are still trying to get over on this system.
Oh, yeah. There are a few little tricks that they try to pull, right? They try to obscure the view of the camera.
Yeah. So check it out. This is I get it, but we can admit this is a little petty. I mean, whatever works, right?
Yeah.
So one tactic that people use when they're trying to get over on the system is they wear all black, or they put a black banner on the wall and they jump into the shadow in hopes the camera won't pick it up.
You know, it doesn't work. That's the thing.
It doesn't work.
Well, you know what? It may make them feel better about it, but they try, right? I mean, I think that's what this whole sport is about, really, is trying to get one over on the officials. And then, you know, then of course next week the rules change, as we said, but that's pretty clever, actually, you know, to put a black banner over the wall, black flag or whatever,
right,
so that it makes the entire wall dark, and then try to wear black and black shoes or whatever, so they can't detect the exact moment when your toe touches the ground.
But that's the thing. We're talking about overlapping monitors. There are multiple monitors and they're time synced, and it's not like these people can't zoom in. You know, this is a pretty expensive system.
Well, Ben, okay, here's the other thing too, is there are so many penalties to be had in the pit road area of a NASCAR track.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a ton, and I can't read all of them. There's just no way.
Give us some good ones, of the juicy ones.
Well, I mean, I guess juicy. I mean, I'd have to really dig through this, but I guess one would be one that this typically catches all the time is a car driving through more than three pit boxes to enter their pit stall. So, you know, let's say you know, instead of pulling right up to it and then making kind of that hard left turn and kind of, you know, making an S turn into your pit box,
yeah,
you make it more of a gradual entry into your pit box and then a gradual exit as well. I think there's another rule that says you can't drive over more than three pit boxes to exit the pit stall
as
well.
That just seems really tempting.
Well, it is, but you know, it puts the other crew members in danger or officials, if they were out wandering around in a pit box three boxes away, you know, if they cut the corner of that, that's the problem. Of course, there's speeds, you know, speeds vary on every NASCAR track, and that kind of depends on the track size. It can go from anywhere from, I think it's 55 miles an hour at Talladega down to like 30 miles an hour at Martinsville. So that's one thing, but I don't think the cameras are so much doing that as watching for, you know, them to, you know, inappropriately toss or throw the fuel filler equipment. That's a penalty. You know, if a tire rolls beyond the center of pit road, that's a penalty as well. If you hand push the car or truck more than three pit boxes to restart it, that's a penalty. So, you know, the camera is really good at picking up exactly where they stop pushing it. Mm-hmm. You know, if it's three pit boxes away, that's a penalty. It's simple to check with a camera, and you can back it up and go forward as much as you want and to determine that. You know, there's stuff with the blend line, you know, when you're exiting the pits, you know, that is all able to be seen through these cameras as well. Pitting out of the assigned pit box, that's a pretty easy one to spot, I think. I don't know if that necessarily needs, cameras to spot, but if you're doing, you know, unapproved mechanical adjustments, you know, like if you're adjusting the flaring of the rocker panels, that's something that's not allowed.
Uh-huh.
If you're running over equipment, let's say that you run over an air hose, that's a big penalty. Sometimes that's not caught by an official if it's, you know, out of their view, if it's on the other side of the car. Again, it all comes to vantage point, and the vantage point that these cameras have, these Hawkeye systems from, you know, the top of the grandstands, they've got an incredible view, and with all the overlapping that these 46 cameras do, there's just nothing that they miss on pit road. They're constantly being watched, and these penalties, it just seems there's so many. I can't imagine. Again, 177 is what they caught in that first test race versus three the officials caught. That's an incredible disparity between the two numbers. I mean, that shows you the value of a system like this for catching these infractions.
Mm-hmm. And
we still haven't talked about benefits.
Oh yeah, we have.
Oh my gosh,
that's what we said.
I misled us. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to mislead us.
No, I set a bad example for you. This is on me. But there are clear benefits. Just to name a couple that we've already outlined, it is going to be more accurate.
Mm-hmm.
And as Scott, you had said, there is not well, there's much less of a gray area.
Yeah,
right?
There's less traffic on pit road, right? Mm-hmm. It means that there's less people out there. So 40 less individuals standing on pit road is a big difference in a race. So officials, I mean, if you want to make this another benefit, is that officials are actually in a safer place. They're in a trailer. They're tucked away. And, you know, if there is an official still down on pit road, and I think there probably are still officials on pit road, they're over the wall. You know, they're behind the wall. They're in a safer spot. It's just, as you said, it's a more accurate way to officiate the sport, which is always good, I think, because, you know, that keeps everybody on the level, right? That's a playing field leveler right there. I mean, if it's more accurate to begin with. Let's see what else. Oh, you know what? They can send this data. As you said, you know, they give them kind of a best of, you know, after the weekend. They give them their, you know, their pit stops through the whole thing, you know, the whole race, allow them to look at it and to review it. Not only that, they get this information that they can send to broadcasters. They can send it to fans to show, you know, like, I guess the popular drivers, maybe if, you know, somebody wants to subscribe to, you know, the different channels that some of the television packages allow. Mm-hmm. This is the footage that they use. Some of this footage is stuff that they find invaluable for a service like that, because that's the stuff that fans want. They want the inside scoop on what happened in that last pit stop, why they received a stop and go penalty, or why they were disqualified from the whole race. It really gives a better overall understanding of the rules to everybody. I mean, the whole series really benefits from something like this, because they can understand, they can watch, they can see exactly what they're doing wrong. Mm-hmm. They get a better grasp of that really complex NASCAR set of rules that they've built over the, what, 60 plus years now.
Yeah, absolutely.
What is this? It's more than that even. It's like 70 some years now.
Yeah, February 21st, 1948.
So we're close.
We're close. It's coming up on the 70th anniversary.
Yeah, yeah.
And Hawkeye will be there.
Right. Hawkeye will be there. We're only a few months away.
Mm-hmm.
So not a bad guess on our part.
Not a bad guess. And, you know, I'd really be interested to hear what you think, ladies and gentlemen. Is this sort of progression of technology, is it improving the sport or diluting it? It brings us back to something I think we had talked about a little bit earlier in some racing podcasts. You know, the institution of, you know, more eco-friendly vehicles, all electric racing, right? The idea of drone racing or racing autonomous vehicles.
Formula E.
Ugh. Yeah, Formula E. Ugh. Scott's favorite,
no,
a.k.a.
No, no. You know, I think, Ben, I personally, this is my own view, is that I kind of like seeing the officials over the wall and watching what's going on. You know, they're hands on the knees, you know, really focused on what's happening during that pit stop. And then, I mean, just intense focus until they're back on the track. I like that. I like the kind of the old school NASCAR officials standing on the track. I know it's dangerous and I know they don't catch as many penalties or whatever, but I kind of like that, that historic part of NASCAR. I mean, I think it's kind of cool that they're introducing new technology and they're finding new ways to do things, but I still would like to see the guy over the wall. What do you think?
Well,
what's your gut on this?
My gut is saying that the technology is more accurate, which makes the sport more competitive.
Okay.
But I don't think they're mutually exclusive. I mean, for Pete's sake, it's not going to hurt anybody to have the guy over there. And, you know, the three times he makes a call, the Hawkeye will probably agree with him.
So he's going to miss the other 40 guys are going to miss the
probably,
174 probably that they missed, right?
And, well, I'm also wondering if Hawkeye will lead to a larger revision of what constitutes an infraction.
What if they watch the fans like this and they're like, oh, that guy right there has had four hot dogs?
I would not be surprised if they are. We are living in an age where, again, technology is collecting all the data.
So if you're in the stands and you see the Hawkeye system pointed from the pit wall back to the stands.
Watch out. It's not a kiss cam.
That's when trouble begins.
They're sending your, they're sending your cholesterol levels to your doctor.
Yeah,
your pulse has been logged on your seat.
Yeah, that'd be a little strange, wouldn't it? Like, oh my gosh, that guy, he's had six beers already. And this is only like a 3-hour race. What's wrong? What's going on?
Let's pull up his Facebook.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. I feel like that. Like maybe, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen.
Well,
they're just watching the cars.
You know, one thing that's interesting, too, is I was talking to someone who works in aviation, and they said that they said that we as a species are very close to having commercial airlines that can just fly autonomously, like having UAVs unpiloted aerial vehicles that carry passengers. But the problem is that psychologically, customers would not accept that.
Oh, yeah.
Passengers would want to hear the this is your captain speaking, you know, and not like a robo voice. So I do think that there's something to be said for keeping the human element in an authoritative position in any vehicular field, you know. Like, I know you're very much a skeptic of autonomous vehicles. And in this case, you know, you have to ask how far can automation and racing go before it's just computers versus computers. You know what I mean?
Yeah. In this case, however, we still have the driver, the crew members.
Sure.
We are taking one individual out of the whole thing, but you've got a trailer full of other officials that are still doing the same thing. It's just less people doing more work.
And those officials that we mentioned over the in the older system, those guys are pros. You don't get to NASCAR you don't become a NASCAR official by showing up in the afternoon and bringing a six pack. You know what I mean?
And to be clear, just so we mention this, because I don't think we did, it's those guys that are in the trailer.
Yes.
And it's those guys that can also, and have in the past, make an override on the decision that the computer makes. Maybe there's a reason that they went through the forbidden box, you know? That's the type of thing. I don't know if that's a good example or not. There may be other things that are better examples, but these officials have overridden the computer in the past, and I think they do it not frequently. I mean, I think typically the system's good, but they do that kind of thing during the race.
Yeah, there should always be I think there should always be a human at the wheel,
yeah,
or at the ultimate switch.
Human element.
Yeah, a human element. So overall, Scott, I would say that I am for this. Are you for it or against it?
You know what? I'm going to go ahead and say I'm for it, even though I would still like to see the officials over the wall. I think it's – but I realize the danger. But I think I'm for this because it does seem to make the teams play a little bit more fairly.
Well, somehow landed on the same page about this one.
Yeah, you know, I do like to watch them. I would like to watch them trying to cheat the system. I think that would be fun too.
Yeah, who doesn't want to dress in all black and jump around in the shadows?
So, I mean, when you say it like that, I mean, but the thing is, you know, yeah, it's fun. It's fun. It's nice to say that, it's nice to say that you want it to be fair across the board, so everybody has an equal chance, you know, in the pit road situation. But it is also fun to see the guys that are trying to get away with something. That's all I'm trying to say.
Absolutely. And now we're almost toward the end of the show, Scott, but you had one of your famous Scott Benjamin one more things.
Oh, I did. Yeah. Remember we were talking about hurricanes recently, hurricane flood vehicles. And there's one thing that I forgot to get to in that episode, and it was that just by coincidence, I think I had mentioned this, I had taken a trip up to Michigan to pick up a car for my daughter from her grandfather.
Yes.
It was her grandmother's car. She can't drive anymore, et cetera. If you haven't heard that, you can go back and listen to it in a previous episode, but
all right.
That saga. But I had driven it back, and of course, we haven't switched over the plates or anything. It was just days after my trip when Hurricane Irma passed through the Atlanta area. And this is by coincidence completely. I called on, you know, the insurance company on a Friday to add that vehicle to our policy. And Irma was supposed to pass through our area on the next Monday. So what, 3-4 days away from that?
Mm-hmm.
They had a moratorium on all insurance policies in several states at that point. Our insurance company did. They were not adding, removing, changing any policy for any vehicle, any home, any property, anything.
Just frozen in time?
Frozen, completely frozen. So I couldn't add that vehicle to our policy, even though I'm in an area that's not really expected to be flooded, and it wasn't. I was unable to add the vehicle to our insurance. So it's in the garage, you know, it's still got plates on it and everything, and there's a way around all this, you know, it'll still be legal. And it will be insured eventually, but even now, even as we speak, mm-hmm. there's still this several state moratorium on policies and policy changes in the area. And it's something I just had never considered, when something like this is happening. It's just bad timing. I mean, if you had bought a new vehicle, I don't know what you'd do. I mean, if you were picking something up from, you know, the dealership lot, you know, the week before, even though you're not really in the storm ravaged area, you're just kind of in its, the outer skirts path, I guess, maybe the edges of it, you know, the tropical storm area. You'd just be, as you said before, SOL.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Straight out of luck.
Straight out of luck. Yeah. Yep. So, I don't know what we're going to do, really. I mean, I guess I have to wait another week or so and then try again. But it's a strange thing. I just had never thought of it. And you know that's, you know, the reason is because people would say, well, you know, I'd like to take out $1 million policy on that Dodge Caliber.
Right. It makes sense, unfortunately.
Yeah. Or suddenly I think I'd like, you know, property damage in the amount of $7 million for my house that's worth $200,000.
Or you guys could pull up your tent stakes and move to Oklahoma, which, as we learned in a previous episode, has the highest number of uninsured drivers.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, we could just kind of let it ride.
Just let it ride. Yeah. Become an Okie.
Well, anyways, I thought it was interesting. I wondered if anybody else had dealt with a similar thing where you're kind of stuck. You can't add it. You can't do the right thing. You can't add a vehicle to your policy.
Talk about a rock and a hard place.
Yeah, well, we're not driving it, so that's okay in our situation. But I wonder what somebody in the same area would do with a brand new vehicle or a new to them used vehicle. It might really, yeah, you're right. It might put you in a really bad spot for a couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm. And this, yeah, this is something important. We need to hear about this because this is a way that potentially somebody could, through no fault of their own, end up in legal trouble.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I don't know what they call it, extenuating circumstances maybe. But again, try to explain that to the state trooper on the side of the road.
Yeah.
That's tough.
Yeah, do your best. Give it the old college try. Well, hopefully you are not in that situation. But we would love to hear your opinion on the technological innovations in NASCAR. Finally, the officials are doing some tech innovation.
Yeah, yeah. And keep your eye open for systems like this in other sports too. If you're if you're watching a tennis match or a golf match or anything, keep your eye open for these Hawkeye systems because apparently it's a big company, and I don't know if they're the only one that's doing it right now, but they're pretty visible.
Yeah,
I mean, you can see the cameras, you can see the trailers that operate this thing, and you know the types of sports that they officiate. So keep an eye open for it. You might learn something.
Hawkeye, it's not just for snooker, right?
That's right, snooker.
In the meantime, if you're a fan of racing, you can check out all of the racing podcasts we have done in the past. They are available for free at our website, carstuffshow.com. You can find Scott and I on Facebook and Twitter, where we are CarStuffHSW. And if you have an idea that you feel your fellow friends, neighbors, and listeners would enjoy, you can email us directly. We are
CarStuff@HowStuffWorks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@HowStuffWorks.com.